You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Excited to talk about one of these deepest systems in the game. It'll be fun.
Yeah, the Padres are an interesting team with a lot of talent. But as we were discussing just a moment ago before we started recording, a lot of it is very, very far away. So it will make for an interesting system, but it may be a little while before you see some of these guys at the major league level.
Yeah, that's definitely, it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out. I mean, AJ Preller is doing, I think he's far exceeding anyone's expectations. I mean, for example, with how deep it is, I mean, Eric Longenhagen at Fangraphs, he's writing up like, you know, a lot of the systems here. He's not stopping like arbitrary, like top 10, top 15, top 20, whatever. He's just writing about every player that's worth writing about in the system, and 32 players for the Padres received a full write-up as a 40 overall player or better.
Oh, wow.
So 32 is obviously the most of any organization he's done. I mean, to put it in perspective, teams like the Tigers had like 18 or 19 guys. So, like, that's a big difference. And then there's obviously countless others that are listed at the bottom of the page that also have their own little mini blurb that aren't worthy of the full blurb. So you're talking about at least 50, 60 guys that are covered here. It's crazy.
Yeah, we will probably not cover that many.
But no, with disclaimer being most of these guys are, I mean, some of them are 16, 17, 18 years old, just entering pro ball as international free agents. And, you know, I'm more draft heavy in how I cover guys anyways. That's my strong suits, the draft, so we'll probably cover a lot more of the domestic guys. It doesn't mean we're racist, it just means that's my strong suit, so I'm going to stick to it.
And I love the little disclaimer. It doesn't mean we're racist.
No, I have to clarify. No, I'm just messing, but got to have a little fun with these. But this system is a good one to entertain, but like I said, a lot of the guys are far away. A lot of the guys are extremely young. If you have any questions about them, please hit me up on Twitter. I'll be gracious enough to answer them best I can, but we're going to stick to probably at least dozen, 15, 12 guys, whatever, however many we get to that are worth covering here, so it'll be good.
So this is considered the prospect minute, but it's definitely going to be more than a minute. So let's jump right in, though, and talk about, let's start with guys that are close to the majors, and I think when you start with guys that are close to the majors, I think the first two that kind of pop off in the Padres system are Manny Margot and Hunter Renfroe. So go ahead and start with them. What do you think of them for 2006 or 2017 and beyond?
Yeah, well, okay. I'm going to ask you really quick. What do you consider elite steal totals? Like, what's a total for a guy that plays all year in fantasy to have elite steals? 30?
Yeah, I would say 30 is probably the benchmark for elite.
Okay, well then I think Margot will barely scrape by. I think what his main skills are, he makes a lot of contact. Unfortunately, he doesn't walk a lot, but I mean, you can't really have someone change the approach at this level. They are what they are when they get to the majors as far as the approach goes. I'm a big believer in that. The power is not going to be much not a big part of the game. I think 8 to 10, maybe 12 homers max. I mean, playing in Petco wasn't as bad as years past, but Margot is not a guy that drives the ball. He hits the ball on the ground a lot anyways, which is good because it fits his skill set. He's a stud defender in center field, so if that raises his floor a little bit, he's going to play more. It's going to be hard to get him out of the lineup because he can cover that gigantic ground out there. But I want to say, his big thing is his speed, but he's not a pure burner. Like, he's not double plus runner. He's not Billy Hamilton. He's not like Jared Dyson. He's not guys like that. But he's a step below, I would say. And that's why I think 30 steals is a reasonable, realistic goal, because for this year anyways, because a lot of what he does, he doesn't walk, so it lowers the batting average floor. He's going to be really batting average dependent on those steals. And I'm not real confident in the average for right now. I mean, I do think he might have a year or two in his career where he gets it up to the 300 range, but I think he's going to settle in this year as a 260, 270 guy, which might cap the steals about 2025. I don't know if you think that's fair or not. I mean, that's just...
I think that's very fair. My only concern with Margot is, I mean, he's major league ready, at least defensively. I mean, he probably could use a little bit more seasoning in AAA in terms of getting some of the hitting down. When do you think he comes up? Because the Padres have no reason.
That's exactly what I was going to get at. Yep, and I mean, in a little known rule too, is September time doesn't count toward actual service time.
Yeah.
So as far as he's concerned, yes, he does have 10 games and 37 at bats under his belt in the major leagues. By the way, he didn't walk in any of those 10 games, to highlight the issue I was talking about before. But he has that. But as far as the service time, he's fresh. He's a baby boy. He hasn't had any time out there. So I think as far as what the Padres are looking at, I mean, you look at the major league roster up and down, they don't really have an incentive to play him, to call him up right away. Because, I mean, when your ace is Julius Chacin at the moment, you don't really have big expectations. I mean, I think their expectation is getting a top three draft pick this year and adding to their system. I think that's the goal. And while Margot will help a lot of their pitchers, it's not like a lot of their guys are young that need, you know what I mean? It's a lot of organizational filler guys, Clayton Richard. And I do like Perdomo, but I mean, last year they had guys like Edwin Jackson rolling out there getting 20 starts. So you know what I mean? They're not at a point in the time where they might be the worst team in baseball next year, and I don't think that's a stretch.
Yeah, I don't think that. Well, I mean, I think them and the A's are probably in a heated battle for the worst team in baseball.
But the A's just signed Roger Davis.
And I mean, you know, on the major league side of things, you know, they're going to want to try to, you know, flip some of, you know, their non-prospects that are at the major league level. So, like, you know, if Margot, I don't think, is coming up for a little while, because I think they want to give Jankowski a chance to...
I do like Jankowski's skills, too. Yeah, I agree with you.
And I like him, you know, as kind of a cheap MLB, you know, option in fantasy, too. But I'm sure they want to build up a little value for him and maybe see if they can flip him for something. You know, Alex Dickerson, they may want to try to flip him for something. They want to see what Jabari Blash has. I've got a feeling that a lot of people believe, you know, in Roster Resource right now, has Margot as the starting opening day center fielder.
Yeah,
I don't think Margot's up. At the earliest, he's up Memorial Day, but I got a feeling he's up closer to July.
See, I think I'm a little earlier on you. I think he might be up at the end of April, kind of do what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant. I mean, he's not that type of player, but that bought the Cubs an extra year. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's next for Margot. I mean, he had the full year in AAA last year, so he doesn't need to do that again. So I think the end of April is realistic for me. But, okay. Yeah, I can't argue with your timeline either, because say they come out of the gate and Jankowski's doing fine. I mean, Jankowski is essentially – I mean, he's not the same type of player, but the skill set in center field is he's going to be a plus defender out there too. So what's the rush?
Mm-hmm.
So I get what you're saying.
And then you have Hunter Renfroe.
Yep.
Who probably – I think he might start the year.
He might. It's a little different story. Yeah, it's – He might start the year at the big club.
Older. So I mean, I think there's a good chance he starts out in right field in San Diego to start the year.
Yeah, for context, Margot's 22 and Renfroe's 25. So, yeah, I get what you're saying there. The thing with Renfro is it's prodigious power. I think, you know, everyone's seen the clip when he hit that home run on top of the warehouse that no one's ever done. That's nuts. Out in left field there. That's crazy power. I do think the problems with Renfro are mechanically with the swing. I mean, I'm not a hitting coach. Well, I have been in the past for young, you know, youth baseball, but I think the amateur things I've read and I've seen for myself is he kind of chokes himself off with his arms a little bit, gets his arms extended a little bit early, so he rolls over a lot of balls or just blatantly swings and misses at a lot of balls. And I think while the power is there for 30-35 homers, I don't think he hits that because I think he strikes out 25-ish% of the time, 25-27% of the time. I mean, defensively, he's a stud in right field. He's got an arm. We saw a little bit of that last year. He handled his MLB cameo last year outstanding. I mean, 800 slugging. I don't think that's that's not going to last. But, I mean, four homers in 35 at-bats is nice. So I think that's a – I think his skill set's one that'll play. I think he's very similar to what Aaron Judge is supposed to be for the Yankees. But I think Renfro is more advanced, and I think Renfro will have a better long-term career. So I am more Renfro than Margot, this year, but Margot is better bet for me long-term.
And I would agree with that. I love, the power potential that Renfro offers. I mean, watching the home run he hit off of Madison Bumgarner when Madison Bumgarner, I think, was throwing a no-hitter, was so impressive. And like you said, the home run that hit the roof, was amazing as well. So I think he has a ton of power potential. I do worry about the contact. He does offer a little bit of speed. I mean, he's not going to be a burner or anything.
No, he'll get you 6 to 8 bases a year, which I think that counts.
Yeah, and that makes that definitely makes up for a little bit of lost value in his average, because I don't think his average is ever going to be stellar.
I agree with that. Yep.
So, what about any other guys that are kind of close to the majors?
Not too many here. We saw Carlos Asuaje come up last year. He's a offensive minded second baseman, more contact than power, but he does have 10 to 12 homer pop. I just don't know if he's going to stick. He's probably just an offensive minded utility guy long term. They have, you know, Ryan Schimpf and everyone forgets about Spangenberg at second base. He's going to be around. So I think Asuaje's kind of blocked there. Shortstop's open. They did grab Alan Cordoba from the Cardinals, who's a Rule 5 pick. I was kind of disappointed to see that, but I don't think he sticks. I think he's coming from A-ball. I mean, he makes a lot of contact. He's got a little bit of speed. The power is non-existent right now. It's supposed to be a little bit slightly below average when he fills out, but he's so far away, I don't think he sticks. Same for Luis Torrens, the guy that grabbed from the Yankees in the Rule 5. I like him as a catcher, but I think he goes back to New York. It's really, really hard to carry a catcher all year that's never played in Double-A on your roster for Rule 5, so I don't expect that. Could be wrong, though, because, I mean, obviously they don't have any expectations for this year. So
yeah, they might be willing to run these guys out.
Yeah.
And let them just learn at the major league level. But I think, especially for a catcher, that's a lot to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess, I mean, that's probably it as far as immediate guys that could be up right away. My favorite four guys in this system, though, are all pitchers. I like Anderson Espinosa, I mean, Cal Quantrill, Adrian Morahone, and Chris Padak. I love all four of these guys. I'm probably higher than most on all four of them, so I guess we can break them down individually now.
Yeah, let's talk about Anderson Espinosa. He was part of the trade that sent Drew Pomeranz to Boston, considered one of the top pitching prospects in the game, even though he's probably not going to see any real MLB time till like 2020.
He might be a little earlier than that, but yeah, you're on the same wavelength. He's not this year or next, so that's all that's important right now. The thing with Espinosa is immediately you look at the scouting report and 370 grades on three pitches jump off at you. That's nasty. 95-97 with movement on the fastball, plus potential curveball with a changeup that's got potential plus written all over it. The delivery is nice and smooth. He reminds me a little bit of, I mean, the body type's not remotely similar because, I mean, he's a lot smaller. But he reminds me of a little bit of Alex Reyes at a year and a half a go in his development. I think it's a good package here for Espinoza. I think he has a chance at a future ace. I mean, whether he hits there or not is we'll have to find out. And we don't really know. San Diego doesn't really have a track record with this new regime of developing pitchers, so we'll have to wait and see. I was amazed that the cost for Drew Pomeranz was Espinoza. That kind of caught me off guard, and especially did when you find out later that Boston was given the opportunity to reverse the trade because Pomeranz had a little bit of injury concern, and they chose not to. So I don't know what Dave Dombrowski, I mean, he obviously doesn't like the prospects, but I mean, that seemed like...
it was always a head scratcher, especially considering not only that, the injury issues that Pomeranz had and has had his entire career, but the fact he had only thrown, like, I want to say it was like 60 or 70 innings the year before. So it was like, you knew you weren't going to get much out of him for that year anyways.
Yeah, and he came and he had to pitch out of the bullpen down the stretch because he was ineffective and he was running up against his innings limit. So, I mean, that was a weird trade. I don't even think he's guaranteed a rotation spot for this year, but I guess that's a different subject.
Yeah, I think he is.
But Espinoza, I mean, he's got the changeup to neutralize the lefties. I know he gets knocked for only being 6 foot, but I don't care about the short righty thing. That's not a thing that bothers me. He's going to fill out. And like I said, he reminds me a little bit of Alex Reyes about a year and a half ago at this time. So if that makes any sense,
that's a pretty good praise.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I mean, Reyes took off in that time period. So, I mean, he took a big jump. We'll see if he can.
All right, let's move on to Cal Quantrill, because I think he's a really interesting prospect that people don't really know much about.
I love this kid. I think he had a chance to go 1-1 in the draft last year if he didn't get hurt. The Padres took advantage of him needing Tommy John surgery, and they grabbed him, I believe, in the 13th, 14th overall, somewhere around there. Obviously, his dad was a major league reliever for 10 years. Bouncing around a bunch of different teams, Yankees and Blue Jays. Cal Quantrill went out of Stanford, 92-95 on the fastball with sink and movement, touches 96, easy plus curveball, or easy plus changeup. The curveball is getting better. He throws a slider also that can be average. He knows how to sequence things. He's intelligent. Like I said, he's got the major league pedigree with his dad and going to Stanford. Obviously, you know, he's got the brains as well as the ability. I always like schools like that because – regardless of how good you are at athletics, you have to be academic smart also. You know what I mean? They don't bend the rules as far as other teams do to get guys in the program. So it's always nice when guys are in Vanderbilt or Duke or Stanford. You know what I mean? Like, it's never a bad thing. I mean, yeah, he did lose a year of development last year. And he came back this year after his draft year, and he destroyed advanced competition for him. I mean, I take that back. I mean, he was 21 when he entered the league, but if you look at the K to walk ratios across three different levels or two different levels of A ball and rookie ball, I mean, he struck out 46 guys in 37 innings, only walked 8 guys. He was a little bit hittable, but I mean, that's when you're coming back and working on things. I think he has small chance at number one ceiling, which I don't think he hits, but I'm confident in saying he can be a number two. In fantasy, I really, really like him. A lot of it depends on what the slider can do. It needs to get a little tighter. It needs to get better. But he's also only 20. He'll be 22 next year, so I'm not too worried about it. Ideal frame, 6'3", 195. Is going to put on some weight, so I'm a big fan.
All right. Do you want to move on to Morion?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a wild card. Big Cuban import, 17 years old. He got an $11 million bonus because the Padres – said, fuck major league rules, we're paying anyone whoever we want. Signed probably, no joke, about 25 to 30 guys and like quadrupled their bonus pool. It was crazy. He was 16 at the time. He's 17 now. He's a lefty, which that's always plus. I have mentioned numerous times how much I love lefties on this show and others. But Adrian Morjon is a guy who... it's a little bit of projection now, but the fastball does get into the mid-90s. The slider is slower. It's on the slower end, but it's nasty. He was shut down with arm injury and instructs, so that's something to watch. I think he's a number two or three long-term. It's extremely risky profile, but he's advanced for his age. And, I mean, Cuba, he was in the professional leagues at 16, so that's anytime you're pitching against guys 10, 12 years older than you and doing okay is always good. So I think he's a guy to watch. I mean, he's a bit raw, like I said, but he's also advanced at the same time. So it'll be quite a bit, but he's an interesting guy to follow. And Chris Padak, the interesting thing here is I hate reading stat lines, but 42 innings, 71 strikeouts. I think that's good.
It's all right.
He was the return for Fernando Rodney, believe it or not, straight up last year, like around May or June, I believe. But now he had Tommy John, so it's going to be obviously slower now. But 90-94 in the fastball with movement. He doesn't really have a big breaking ball, but his best pitch is a changeup. I've seen him cut to like a John Lackey. He's a big Texan. Like Lackey, I think he could have that type of career where he comes in for a long time and pitches. Obviously, the injury concerns are there with Tommy John. But, I mean, that's a good comp that I like, a big strike thrower like that, that with the attitude says, I can get you out, here's my shit, hit it. You know what I mean? I like that. So,
all right. Who else in the system is kind of worth stashing?
I'm not really big on second base prospects, but Luis Urias is a good player to get to know. He was 20 years old last year. He was 19 when he made his cameo in AAA, which is nuts. He's Ozzie Albies-ish there on that aspect. But he only played, you know, he was up for the AAA right before the playoffs and the AAA playoffs in 9 at-bats. He only got 9 at-bats over 3 games, but he held his own. Had a monster year at the Cal League for low A. The big thing here is the strikeouts. He only struck out 6.8% at age 19. Despite being 3 years younger than guys in the Cal League. So that's pretty good. 330, 397 slash. Power is not going to be a big part of the game. Makes a lot of contact. Speed really isn't either, so he's all going to be batting average dependent. So I know that's not a guy you're really interested in. But that's the game there. They got Fernando Tatis from the White Sox in the James Shields trade.
Now this is Junior, not Senior.
Yeah, not senior, who hit 2 grand slams in 1 inning, which is the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But, I like Tatis. He's listed as a shortstop. He's not going to be that. He's going to be a third baseman just like his poppy. But he's a good potential guy. He's so far away. I mean, it's an extremely risky profile. But you're looking at a guy who can hit 20 home runs and hit 260, 270, and probably bat in the 5-6 spot in a future batting order. I like Jacob Nix a lot. He's a right-hander they got from the draft. He was kind of involved in the Brady Aiken thing with Houston because Nix was a draft pick of the Astros at the same time. And the negotiations at the buzzer with Aiken, when they fell through, the Astros lost all that bonus money. And they had Aiken signed to a below-slot deal. The Astros hadn't agreed to it, but he didn't sign it yet. They were kind of going back and forth. With that savings, they were going to be able to sign Jacob Nix and then Mac Marshall, who's now in the Giants system. They were going to use that money for both of them. And when Aiken disappeared, they lost those two guys too. So it was quite a big deal with that. He has really good fastball, does Nix, big 12-6 breaking ball. I mean, he's a long time away, like I said. He went to the IMG Academy because after he was a senior in high school, he didn't commit to a college and couldn't because he had an agent. So then he had to go to IMG and kind of just train for a year. And he had the UCLA commitment, but that was gone. So I like the stuff there. I like Nix as a potential mid-rotation arm with strikeout potential. Logan Allen from Boston, along the same lines. Came from Boston in the Kimbrel deal. He's not as strikeout heavy as Nix, but he is a lefty that gets up to the mid-90s with a good changeup, so he's got premium velocity. Jorge Ohna didn't play last year. He's a potential plus power guy. Got a $7 million bonus. Anytime someone gets big money like that, they're worth paying attention to. Hasn't played in pro ball yet, so I mean, I can just tell you what I've been reading, and it's big plus power. Early comps are like Jorge Soler-ish and you know, big body comps like that. Jorge Soler, Eloy Jimenez, he could be a player of that ilk. So he's one to follow. Everyone else is so far away, I don't know if it's worth discussing. I mean, Eric Lauer was a first-round pick this year. He's probably a back-end guy, command control out of Kent State. He did dominated the Cape Cod League, big college all-star league, pretty much 125 Ks and 103 innings at Kent. So strikeouts are there. Probably don't translate to the majors, but, I mean, he's an interesting guy to know. Michael Geddes, he was in double A last year. He is probably one of the toolsiest players in the minor leagues. The power is potentially above average. He's a no-shit center fielder with a cannon for an arm. He hits the ball so hard. He's very similar to, like, a Randall Grichuk for me, and I like a player like that, except his approach is better. But he does strike out a lot. He does walk. He is a potential guy for 20 to 25 steals and 15 to 20 homers at the big league level, but it's a big if because he has so much variance. But he's one of my personal favorites as well. So,
all right. Well, that'll wrap us up, I guess, then, unless there's one last sleeper guy you want to get in.
I like Buddy Reed. He's a guy out of Florida. He didn't play center because they have other guys out there that were better, but he is a no-shit center fielder as well. He's a 70 runner with a plus arm. The biggest thing with him is the hit tool needs to come around, but everything else is there. I mean, I'm not going to cover Josh Naylor. He's in the system.
I was just about to ask you, we talked about the stabbee.
Yeah.
Now we have the stabber.
The stabber. The stabber hasn't had much positive developments in his career. He's been in a that's gotta be the nickname now, right? The stabber.
Yeah, he's
the
stabber. Yeah.
I do think though he is a player that's worth investing in. The numbers aren't great. I will be the first to admit that. But every park he's been in has pretty much been pitching heavy, except for this year in the Cal League. But that was only for half a season after the trade. The power didn't uptick as much as I hoped, but like I said, he's been in pitching leagues his entire career with the Marlins organization. They have a lot of pitchers parks in their leagues. So next year is a big year for him. If you want to buy low on Naylor, I wouldn't hate you for it. I mean, my expectations aren't very high. I don't think he hits enough to be a first baseman, but with the downturn in the position lately, I mean, he could be a backhand guy for a few years. So I wouldn't hate you if you traded for him now, but he's not a guy I'm overly excited about.
I mean, the thing with Naylor though is, a year ago, we were talking about him as probably the Marlins' best prospect.
And he still would be if he was there, I think. He'd be second behind Braxton Garrett, I think.
Yeah, he'd be one or two in the Marlins system. I don't think he's top 25 in the Padres system. This is how deep
borderline.
The system.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys are, for the Padres, are profiled as relievers or defensive first players. So from a fantasy realm, he's probably top 20, which is what we're concerned about. But from a real life level, I can 100% agree with you. He's borderline top 25, if that. That just shows the depth here.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that will wrap us up. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB. Reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Definitely check out all the stuff we've got going on at FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. Accompanying these Prospect Minute podcasts, Matt is putting up prospect lists for each team. So there's not a ton of like analysis and stuff because you can listen to the podcast for that. But he gives you kind of his list in terms of fantasy value.
Just like to get something down on paper. And I mean, they're not as detailed as the lists were last year, but I think those lists combined with these podcasts is a lot. It's more than enough, I think. So
yeah. So I think it's definitely useful, especially in your drafts and in your auctions and things like that as you prep for those coming up. So definitely check that out. Check everything else out on the site, ranks, more podcasts, more articles, things of that nature. Definitely do that. And as it was mentioned at the top of the show, definitely give us a 5-star review. If you take a screenshot of it or send me a copy at Fantasy Benefits or friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com, I'll make sure you get into a listener league or are eligible to win prizes.
Prizes.
Yeah, prizes. I've got, I think, T-shirts and hats and things like that that were donated to me from our good buddy at the Rec Room, Rec Room Todd. So, yeah, you're gonna want to do that and give us a review. aside from the fact that I think we're doing a pretty awesome job this offseason trying to prep everybody. So that will wrap us up. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.